Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now though, we're just 2 months away from the start of the Summer Olympics, when many Irish athletes will head to Paris to represent us, hopefully make the medal podium too. And to tee us up for that, we're returning now to the RTE Radio archives with Damien O'Mara and his 11-part Chapters of Magnificence series, which is celebrating some of Ireland's Olympic medalists. And Damien has been working on this series alongside his colleagues in RTE Sport, and he's with us now. Lovely to have you back with us.
Hi, Claire.
Damien. Now, talking to our Olympians, how much do they feel that they're building on history and that they're essentially passing the baton on to the next generation?
Yeah, it's massive, and it's quite genuine, and it's not something that appears to be contrived. And I think maybe it's that thing about the Olympics, that for those couple of weeks in the middle of the summer, particularly when we're kids and, you know, you're off in your summer holidays and this is the centre of your sporting world. To a man and a woman, when you talk to them about the Olympics, they always refer back to, "I remember seeing so-and-so. And I saw them do that and I thought I can do this too."
Their own inspiration.
Yeah, and a massive figure. And the series will end on the opening weekend of the Olympics with a programme in tribute to Ronnie Delaney. And you speak to modern Olympians and they still talk about getting a phone call from Ronnie Delaney to effectively welcome them to the Olympic family. So there's a massive sense of you are a chapter in what is this developing story, and you owe an awful lot to the heritage of the people that have gone before. And likewise, it's like people talking about leaving a jersey in a stronger place for people who come afterwards. One of the areas that it's most evident in is boxing. And we have spoken on so many occasions in the past about boxing being Ireland's, you know, preeminent Olympic sport and the concerns that exist around boxing's place in the future. We've won 35 medals in all. Of the medals that we have won, 10 of those have been won by boxers born in Belfast. And it is such an important part of the story. I won't list them all off, but we could go from John McNally's silver in 52 all the way up to Aidan Walsh's bronze in 2020. And in the episode to be broadcast on Sunday week, Paddy Barnes, who has a special place in history himself, the first person to medal for Ireland at two different stagings of the Olympic Games, speaks in great detail to Adrian Eames about what it is about Belfast that has made it such a boxing stronghold.
Belfast is just a fighting city, you know. You've had to pay for everything in the city, you know, whether it be human rights, civil rights. It's just the fighting's kind of ingrained in us. And I think that's showed on the international sporting stage. A rich history of Commonwealth Games champions, European champions, professional world champions and Olympic medalists. We haven't had an Olympic champion yet, but there's plenty of time. For those to come.
So in many respects, do you think that the Troubles created an atmosphere in the city where, you know, kids would gravitate towards their local boxing club?
I think so. I think that kind of fighting spirit, you know, I feel like if you're back against the wall, you'll come out fighting. And, you know, obviously the current crop of fighters now, even in my era, like even when I was boxing, like I wasn't part of the Troubles. I was thankfully born after them, late 80s. But I really do think there's an element of that there of you know, the Troubles kind of having an effect on, like, the kind of fight mentality and the kind of mentality of people had.
That's Paddy Barnes there talking to Adrian Eames. Now, Damien, I think we sometimes forget that, like, even when you make it to the Olympics, you're amongst the best in the world. And of course, some people go on, they have a great experience, they might even come home with a medal. Some people have terrible experience, though.
Yeah, and like, you know, you talk there about the hope that we will medal, and Olympic sport and sport in general in the country is at a level where it's almost inconceivable to think that we won't be sitting here on the 12th of August, the day after the Olympics, and reflecting on someone coming home with a medal.
No, like, pressure now there, Damien.
Well, listen, I think it's about realistic expectation. And, you know, but I think there are very genuine medal hopes, and there are people that have done so much on the world stage. But like you've touched upon, like, motivation comes in many forms, and one of the standout moments for me from Tokyo wasn't one of the medals. It was an interview Des did with Emmett Brennan, the boxer, and he was almost talking about having gone to the Olympics and failed, and then Des, who's like forgotten more about the Olympics than most of us will ever have lived through, is reminding him of the fact that, no, hang on a second, you got to the Olympics.
Got here, yeah.
And by the very nature of getting there is a massive achievement. There are obviously positives, and there were people who will come home as national heroes, and there will be people who will come home from Paris who will have fallen short of the expectation that they placed upon themselves. And it's interesting when you go back through the archives and you speak to the people who have medals and have come into possession of medals, that very often it's the righting the wrong of initial experiences is what drives them on. And one that really sticks out is John Tracy. Like, John Tracy's marathon success, his silver medal in LA in 84, he had never run a marathon before that afternoon and finishes second to Carlos Lopez of Portugal, who was running his third marathon.
It's like, quite unbelievable.
It's unbelievable when you think about it now. And I think Jimmy's commentary of John winning the medal, where he listed off all 13 previous medal winners just as John crossed the line, is iconic. But John puts a lot of the success of 84 down to the disappointment of 80. Went to Moscow, competed in the heats of the men's 10,000 metres, and it all went horribly wrong.
And they come up, the fellows do, to took the bell. There it is. And Tracy looks very, very tired for a moment there. He's got a stitch, I think. I think Tracy's got a stitch or a cramp. This is sensational. And Tracy could be in diabolical trouble. I don't know if it's exhaustion. Will Tracy make it at all? I don't think he will. He's collapsed. Tracy is down. He's out of the race. He won't be in the final. That is terrible, terrible for John Tracy. John Tracy's on the track. Medical attention's been brought to him now.
Something that I've never experienced before. I've never blacked out in a race, you know, like lost consciousness after the middle of a race.
I think about it a bit. I went to Moscow in fantastic shape. You weren't expecting the weather to be really super hot in Moscow. It was 33 degrees. That's the first time hearing that commentary. I just kind of have blanked that from my mind totally and utterly, right? And I kind of never relived that piece. I do remember waking up underneath the stand in Moscow, and Tom O'Riordan, the journalist, looked in at me and he says, "John, if you crawled, you'd have qualified." And I had no idea what he was talking about. And then about 30 seconds later, I realised where I was. And for the first time in my life, I had failed to finish a race. And I had done it in the most biggest event of my life.
Oh, it's so interesting to listen to that. That'll be on Sunday.
Sunday's edition. And I promise you, he does actually talk more about the medal success in LA in 84. But it was just so interesting. And he himself had never heard that interview that he had done in the aftermath. But he speaks very openly about, "I went to LA to right the wrongs of Moscow in 80, which is fascinating.
Even before you qualify, when I was going home the other day, I was listening to the news, and in the sports bulletin, there was a quick mention of someone who missed out on qualifying for the Olympics this time out. And I thought, you're a line in a news bulletin. Can you imagine what has gone into getting to that point where you're in the qualifying heats and then you do not make it?
And then to develop that ever so slightly further, I did a programme with Marty on, I think it was New Year's Day this year, and we're talking about our hopes for 2024. And to touch on something we've alluded to is my biggest hope for Paris is that it's realistic expectation. And we can pick a whole load of athletes who people may not be that aware of, but for that 18 or 19 days, it gets so intense.
Yes.
And you talk about Claire Byrne failed to win a medal. And you're saying that is such, like, that the context,
it's a long way to go
how you contextualise that is completely wrong. And like you said, there are people who woke up the morning after the Tokyo Games and said, the road to Paris starts now.
Mm-hmm.
And then that road ends for you in a qualifying tournament in Italy or wherever it is, Singapore, away from home. It's, you know,
well,
it's,
that's
it's difficult.
The resilience that we should be celebrating,
100%.
You know, regardless of what happens. Yeah. Now, we've also had our share of controversies, though, haven't we? Athletes making the headlines for reasons they'd prefer not to, or maybe they'd like to forget about.
Yeah, so one of the participants in the series is Keane O'Connor, and Keane very openly admits that the Olympics have defined his career. And again, it's a sport that is probably, for the most part, a minority sport that people tune into very much around the time of the Dublin Horse Show or the Olympics. He won a bronze medal in London in 2012. Again, far from straightforward circumstances. Hadn't actually originally qualified for the individual show jumping final. Got in on the morning of the final when he was on the standby list. Another horse effectively fails the fitness test. And all of a sudden, Keane and Blue Lloyd are back in the final and went on to win a bronze medal after a jump off. I think for a lot of people of a certain vintage, if you talk about Keane O'Connor and the Olympics, Waterford Crystal in Athens in 2004 is what jumps into the mind. I think you can judge people's engagement engagements or maybe ages by their engagement with the Olympics and what it is they remember. A lot of people will remember Waterford Crystal. The horse was found to have samples of sedatives in its bloodstreams after competing. Keane was obviously stripped of the medal. It's not something that he speaks about in very frequently, but it is something that he's spoken about in this series. And obviously, kind of what was the story of the summer in many ways in 2004-2005?
Somebody said, you know, about the call-up being so late, and how did you prepare so late? And I kind of said at the time, you know, I've been preparing this for 8 years. I talk to my kids sometimes about it, tell them, you know, that I was at the Olympics so young, when I was 24. I think it was an amazing time, surreal situation to have got that opportunity to jump there. Obviously, what happened afterwards was very difficult to deal with. But I suppose I've moved on, and close family and friends around me helped me get through it. Mistakes were made and we learned and we keep going.
Also on 5-7 Live, it's just been confirmed that traces of two banned substances have been found in Waterford Crystal's B blood sample. We'll be following that breaking story.
The real news tonight is that this substance, the two substances, zoclovitantixol and favenazine, have actually been found in Waterford Crystal.
Yeah, it was a difficult time. As you say, it was a huge news story. I was invited to be People of the Year Awards on the side of the buses, Aris Nuachtarán and so on. So it was a big turnaround when that happened. I suppose luckily in the end, the FAI, the international governing body, found that I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't deliberately set out to affect the performance of the horse, and I actually gained no advantage on the night. But the minimum sanction was to forfeit the class. Listen, you always try and learn, and we were operating within the rules that we thought were the rules. And if you're outside zero, as I said, it was a fraction of a millionth of a gram, and that's not zero. And so you have to put your hand up and you have to accept it.
All right, so that's Cian O'Connor there. You also heard Ortiz, Rachel English and the late Charlie Bird. People were happy. Like, that's not easy for Cian to have that conversation, but he was happy to do it, was he?
Yeah, and like, I think his focus is the career he's built subsequently, and like, London was obviously... I don't think he would shy away from the fact, and certainly addresses it in the programme, that for a lot of people, London in 2012 almost closed the book on Athens in 2004. Like, I remember... the day Keane won his bronze medal in London was the day that Katie fought her semi-final in boxing. And basically the eyes of the sporting world from an Irish perspective were on the Excel Arena and Katie. And I remember our colleague Claire McNamara and I were on a bus on the way to the boxing and got a phone call to say, Keane O'Connor's in the show jumping final. Get off, get whatever you need to do, get to Greenwich. And the thing that really sticks out in my mind from that, and we talk about it in the programme, is equestrian journalists who cover the sport week in, week out, the level and the outpouring of support for him on that day, and the joy that people who are part of the travelling circus around show jumping had, that basically everything that he had experienced was closed. Now listen, there's controversy around all these things, and people have differing opinions, but
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned this when we were listening to John Tracy there, that a lot of the people who you're interviewing, they won't have heard any of these clips before.
There's a really odd thing when you speak to sports people who have been involved in very iconic moments. If you ask certain people to relive certain moments in their career, which define their career for us as spectators and fans, they start to relive them as the television footage exists. So they no longer relive it in the first person as they lived it. They relive it as they see it. And one of the things for me, we have like a trove of radio archive material. There were no radio players, there were no podcasts, there were no listen back facilities.
Yeah.
So like, it's like that adage of, was it Con Houlihan talked about Italia 90, that, you know, I missed Italia 90 because I was in Italy. And there's a lot of this where like, Keane had never heard Charlie Bird break that story. He tells a very good story afterwards about when he heard of Charlie's illness, inviting Charlie to Carlswood, which is his stables and training operation. And basically they hadn't spoken since Athens, and how they spent some time together. But the one thing that runs through the entire series is Michael Crewth had never heard an interview with his mother, which went out on the Monday after he won his medal. John Tracy had never heard that interview he'd done in Moscow. And it's really, I found it really interesting that...
I'd say it was fascinating to sit there watching them. Were they sitting there with headphones on listening to this and watching the face
there,
then?
There is a whole selection of emotions because, like, you know, you listen, and John alludes to it in the clip that we played, that when you go to your first Olympics, and you never know that there's going to be a second Olympics or a third Olympics or whatever else, and... it goes wrong on the biggest race of your life. And, like, you know, he touches on it there that he had probably spent, you know, 44 years trying to forget that race in Moscow, and then all of a sudden we're playing him an
Damien
interview.
O'Mara.
Here's, you know, it's like surprise, surprise. You know, like listen to this clip, and you know, it's the same with. It's interesting. Jimmy McGee is such a. There's two things actually. Charlie Bird and Jimmy McGee are such a constant through the coverage. So Charlie. What did the homecoming for John Tracy at Dublin Airport? John is not a man who likes the spotlight, and he, you know, it's I won't say it's an uncomfortable homecoming, but he's quite clearly like, what are you all doing here? Like, I've just won a medal for winning a race. The other one is Jimmy, and you know, Kenneth Egan, the boxer, is to come later in the series, and it's almost like a badge of honour for some people that what was the defining moment of my career. People like Jimmy or Charlie Bird or others provided the soundtrack for it.
Yeah, they did the eyewitness account.
So it's been the archive stuff has been fascinating. All and right. it's
Sunday evening
half past seven
and on RT Radio 1. It's called Chapters of Magnificence, and as you have said to us before, it continues right up until the Paris Games begin in late July. Is the entire series available on the RT Radio?
If you log on to the Radio Player or podcast platforms, the first edition with Michael Carruth from Barcelona in 92, David Wilkins, who won a sailing medal in Moscow in 80, they're both up there available already, and the episode with John. So by the end of it, we'll have 11 chapters of reflections and history relived and everything else.
Perfect to get us in the mood for the Olympics coming up in the summer. Damien, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Damien O'Mara from RT Sport, and Damien's going to be back with us for more in a few weeks' time. We're going to keep up with this series as it unfolds.